I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, we'll talk about the big news in regards to the possible return of the Seattle Supersonics, although I'm still a bit skeptical. Plus, the Fed's launching an investigation into Washington State's reparations program. And, man, Democrats can't even virtue signal in peace these days. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner. Now I can say that's less than a gallon of gas. Yes, because a gallon of gas is more than $5, unfortunately. Undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. 12 days. Tick tock, Governor Bob Ferguson. 12 days since the income tax was sent to his desk, and Bob hasn't signed it yet. Don't you find that odd? I find that quite odd.
I'm just scared they're planning this big party.
Maybe they're planning a real shindig to sign it. But this is his baby. He's been supporting it all session. First income tax, totally unconstitutional in Washington State, 9.9% on people who earn over $1 million a year. And it has been 12 days since it was sent to his desk for approval, and he hasn't signed it yet. And I mean, I want to have some hope and think maybe he's rethinking it. Maybe he's been watching our show. I do know that this is Bob Ferguson's favorite show. He just won't admit it. And maybe he realizes that, wow, all these people we want to tax with this income tax, they're up and leaving. They're picking up their family and their businesses and all the jobs they created and all the capital, and they're going elsewhere. Or maybe it's even more shallow than that. I mean, I think maybe he's a little bit worried about his own reputation and the visual of him on camera signing the tax that will lead to the demise of Washington State's economy. But I also wonder if maybe he was waiting for a little meeting that he had on Monday with NBA Commissioner Adam Silver ahead of a vote that happened today where the NBA Board of Governors officially approved exploring bids and applications for expansion teams in Seattle and Las Vegas. So we know that getting the Seattle Supersonics back would be a feather in the cap of any politician. We lost the team. It's been a very sad thing. And so Bob Ferguson would love for part of his legacy to be getting the Sonics back, for that to happen under his leadership. But as I pointed out, certainly previously, and as I asked the governor at a press conference earlier in the legislative session, I mean, won't the millionaire's tax make that more difficult? And he sort of scoffed at it at the time. More on that in a second. But here's Governor Ferguson's statement on the vote, the initial vote to grant expansions. He said, "For two decades, Washingtonians have mourned the loss of our Sonics. Today's vote is a milestone in the effort to bring NBA basketball back home. The time is right. The state-of-the-art Climate Pledge Arena already hosts professional basketball and hockey with the Storm, Kraken, and Torrent in front of a dedicated fan base. And we know we have the best fans in the NBA. Bringing the Sonics back is a top priority, and the state will be a strong partner in this effort. I plan to be there at tip-off with thousands of fellow fans when the Sonics return." Now, the two things in his statement there where he says the time is right and the state will be a strong partner. I don't know that the time is right, and I don't know that the state will be a strong partner. As I pointed out, and it was a question I asked the governor, won't the millionaire's tax make it more difficult to attract top talent, which is what any NBA franchise wants? And it wasn't just me raising that concern. When they had a Zoom meeting a couple weeks ago, NBA Commissioner Adam Silver raised that concern to Bob Ferguson, and there were internal documents obtained by Ari Hoffman that laid that out, that the commissioner was concerned about a few things: the high cost of maintaining a basketball team, challenges posed by the millionaire's tax on recruiting top players. So these concerns were brought to the governor's attention when he and the commish had a meeting on Zoom a couple weeks ago, around the time that Democrats in the legislature passed the millionaire's tax and sent it to his desk for approval. And he hasn't done anything with it yet. And then he had another meeting with the commission on Monday. Now this vote is happening. Did he promise the commissioner something? Did he say, hey, maybe I won't sign, maybe I'll veto the income tax on millionaires? Now, I think, frankly, that that would be a bad reason to veto it. I mean, I want him to veto it. But I think there's a much larger, more important reason to veto it. And that's because it will decimate our state's economy to the point where we'll never be able to recover from it. And he should care about that more than he cares about an NBA team. But hell, I'll take any reason. If he wants to veto it because that was an agreement or something. Now, I don't know. It's I'm probably just wishful thinking at this point. Probably just wishful thinking. But I mean, I think there's a reason he hasn't signed it yet. And so you understand how this works. Just not signing it would still, that doesn't stop the law. So the only way to stop the law from taking effect is Governor Ferguson has to veto it. If he just chooses not to take action, it goes into law anyway. So it could be that he just doesn't want to have, because of, he knows maybe at this point that this is going to have a disastrous impact on the state, and he doesn't want the video of him signing it to be played on loop in the next election. I don't know. But we'll see. We'll wait and see. And I still definitely have some concerns about new ownership for the Sonics. It's going to have to be a bunch of rich people. What is that going to mean for their bottom line and for their tax interests in the state of Washington? Recruiting top players to both the NFL and the NBA with the millionaire's tax, all of that I think will come into consideration. But, you know, I'd be happy to get the Sonics back. I would love to take in a basketball game in Seattle. This was the team I supported long before I even knew where Seattle was on a map when I was a little kid. And so I would love that. I don't want to wish against it for the state of Washington, but we have to be honest about the fact that it is a business and they have business considerations. So, clock is ticking, Bob. Where's this big bill signing of this income tax that you're so proud of? We're waiting. Hell, I might even attend. I might even attend. All right. This is huge news that came out yesterday and really near and dear to my heart, because this is a program I've been railing against and that we've done an awful lot of work on, this idea of reparations for Black first-time home buyers. So Washington State has something called the Covenant Home Ownership Program, and it's a reparations program. And when they passed it, I'm like, this is illegal. It was giving out, at first it was loans, where if you were a Black first-time home buyer of color under a certain income threshold and you could trace your lineage to Washington State like pre-1960s, then you could get like up to, the average was like $120,000. The state would give you in tax, in money through this fund that home buyers pay into, so you could buy a house. And at first, it was a loan where you'd have to eventually pay it back when you sold the house. But now they changed it. So it's just a gift. They're just gifting people based on skin pigmentation money to buy a house. And there really is a lot of latitude in how you prove that you had lineage and you're like a Black or person of color and your family members were living here back in the 60s and 70s. I mean, like you can show like yearbook photos and stuff. So the whole thing. But the bottom line is it's illegal. It's race-based housing discrimination. And the Department of Housing and Urban Development has announced it is now investigating Washington State's Covenant Home Ownership Program. This is huge news. I think it's about time and it totally makes sense. So they sent a letter to the Washington State Housing Finance Commission saying they're launching this probe. It says the Fair Housing Act categorically prohibits every entity engaged in residential real estate related transactions from discriminating against any person in the availability or terms or conditions of such transaction because of race or national origin. The letter says residential real estate related transactions include making loans or providing other financial assistance for purchasing or maintaining a dwelling. So the Covenant and Home Ownership Program provides down payment assistance, so that certainly qualifies. The letter goes on to say, upon completion of our investigation, the Office of Fair Housing and Equal Opportunity may file a complaint against the Commission for discrimination based on race or national origin under statute. If we find reasonable cause to believe the Commission has or intends to violate the civil rights of its citizens, we will file charges of discrimination or refer the matter to the United States Department of Justice for further enforcement. And I don't see how they don't come to that conclusion. You can only get the money if your skin's a certain color. So obviously it excludes, and not to mention on religious grounds as well. There was also redlining when it came to Jewish people. And Jewish people are excluded from being able to use the Covenant Home Ownership Program. So if it's about people who were subject to housing discrimination and making things right again, why are you excluding Jewish people? That they also exclude certain Asian American communities, which is weird. So, I mean, it's obviously racist. It's obviously illegal. I mean, we said that at the very beginning, and legislators in Olympia were warned about this repeatedly. So HUD Secretary Scott Turner said in a statement after this investigation was announced, DEI is dead at HUD. Those who ignore the law and violate the rights of Americans for political purposes will not continue. As HUD secretary, I will not stand for illegal, racial, and ethnic preferences that deny Americans their right to equal protection under the law. I love that he's black. God, that's perfect. I love that he's black. And he's like, no, you won't give preferential treatment to black people. It just doesn't make any sense. He went on to say, HUD will work to ensure Washington State follows the law and provides equal opportunity for all citizens seeking assistance under the commission's programs. Under President Trump's leadership, HUD will vigorously enforce the Fair Housing Act and ensure all Americans have an equal shot at the American dream. Yeah, I just wait with bated breath for Washington State's argument that this is a racist action from the federal government under a black HUD secretary. So, of course, the Covenant Home Ownership Program is not the only program that HUD should be investigating. We have two reparations programs in Washington State that unlawfully discriminate on the basis of race. The other one is one that we talked quite a bit about, and we did a whistleblower report. I think it came out at the beginning of October. Whistleblower State Equity Program became a fund for personal enrichment, and in it we talk about the Community Reinvestment Program. This is a $260 million program from the state of Washington that gave money to BIPOC nonprofits to just give that money out to black community members to pay off their credit card debt, to buy a home, to start a business, all sorts of things. Money that you couldn't get if you were white. Again, so I don't see how it's any different than the Covenant Home Ownership Program. In a lot of ways, it's worse because with Covenant, the money isn't technically, quote, it is, but it's not like taxpayer money they're taking out of the general fund and giving to these people to buy a house. It's money where if you buy a house, you have to pay an added fee. And that fee at the recorder's office goes into this fund. But it's like, that's still taxpayer money. It's taking money from citizens to give to other citizens so they can buy a house because of their skin pigmentation. But the reason I say that the Community Reinvestment Program is even worse is this is straight up like taxpayer money from a fund saying, we'll pay off your credit card debt. We'll help you buy a house. We'll help you start a business because of this, the color of your skin. But I will say, just a reminder that after we did that whistleblower report on the Community Reinvestment Program, Democrats and Republicans worked together to stop some of the self-dealing that was happening within that program. You'll remember Democratic State Representative Christine Reeves adding an amendment to improve oversight.
When we put a program into statute, we are saying that it must operate transparently, it must be measured, and it must withstand public scrutiny. It must continue to earn the trust of this body, Mr. Speaker, and the people of Washington State. We piloted it, we measured it, it's working. Today, Mr. Speaker, I'm asking you to join me in voting yes for responsible government that promotes restorative justice, data-informed policy that puts people first, and clear results that help communities thrive.
Yeah, I mean, that's good. So at least there's some anti-fraud, anti-self-dealing protections now built into the Community Reinvestment Program because of our whistleblower and our investigative work on that. But it's still a racist program. You made it better, but it's still a racist program. And that program specifically does involve HUD. You have HUD-certified housing counselors who are helping people connect people to that money. So I hope that when HUD is done investigating the racist reparations program that is the Covenant Home Ownership Program, I hope they then turn their sights on the other racist reparations program that we have in Washington State. There are a lot of people who could use assistance in buying a home. Now, whether the government should be giving them assistance, I think we can maybe agree to disagree on that, but you certainly shouldn't be giving assistance based on skin pigmentation, blatantly against the law. All right, this just tickles me. I love this so much. So, but Democrats, you're trying to do the right thing and virtue signal to your far left base of voters. But man, they won't even let these Democrats virtue signal in peace anymore. It's really, you can't please the far left. You can't please them. So, of course, Governor Ferguson has been obsessed with talking about this bill that he signed that makes it illegal for ICE agents to wear a mask. I mean, he will not stop tweeting about it. And it doesn't do that. I just signed a historic bill in Washington State. Law enforcement officers, including ICE, are now prohibited from wearing masks. And he just keeps pushing out these videos. Oh, it's historic. It's historic. It's historic. It literally doesn't do that. They can't stop ICE agents from wearing masks. And he knows that. He's a lawyer. He knows that they have no right to dictate how federal law enforcement carries out their functions in the state of Washington. But I mean, he's trying to virtue signal. Every freaking day they're tweeting about this. well, he's not signing the millionaire's tax. So maybe he's trying to get some attention off that, off the income tax. But he's out there virtue signaling like crazy. And then he goes to sign this. And he was signing a couple law enforcement related bills at this bill signing that was televised. And what happens? Well, far left protesters and hecklers show up and start screaming at him.
I said, as an American, I never thought I would see federal agents in masks jumping out of unmarked cars and grabbing people off our streets. This conduct will undoubtedly be remembered as a shameful period in our nation's history. It's horrific, it's unjust, and it needs to stop now. I went in to highlight legislation from Senator Valdez, who's the prime sponsor's legislation, about the importance of Senate Bill 5855. And I said, let's get that legislation to my desk immediately so I can sign it into law. And thankfully, because of a lot of hard work and a lot of folks, that day has arrived. Thank you so much, everybody, for your hard work on this.
Yeah, and it got even worse. At one point, one of the protesters actually jumped up in front, demanding they take steps that apparently they haven't taken yet.
House Bill 2165 keeps people safe by making it a gross misdemeanor to
because
wear
I'm being
law
asked
enforcement.
To leave. This is a list of things we need right now for safety that can be done immediately.
Look at this weak,
all
weak thing.
All cameras are hackable. All surveillance is subpoenable, let alone hackable. We need funding for people who are scared to work because of your carelessness. DOL needs to stop sharing data with anyone who will
does
share
nothing.
It with DHS. DHS out of Washington State.
So House Bill 2165 helps keep people safe by making a gross misdemeanor to wear a law enforcement insignia or have it on your vehicle.
Okay. I mean, how delicious is that? Like, here they are signing just strictly virtues bills that are only intended to virtue signal to the far left. And the far left isn't even satisfied with them. Oh, we need, and they got the mask on, of course, at the bill signing about, oh, you can't wear a mask to hide your face. You've got this protester wearing a COVID mask. And they're like, oh, they want to do away with all these camera systems that they think are hurting illegal aliens. And they want a fund to help pay people who are too scared to work. Like, they're protesting politicians who basically do exactly, and that's why they're doing it, because politicians like Bob Ferguson are weak and they just give in to the demands of far left lunatics. And so they're like, yeah, let's show up and yell for some other things we want. And Bob Ferguson even gave them, I think, more of a platform by addressing the demands of protesters while he was up at the lectern.
I was also going to speak briefly to the protesters as well, and I appreciate you mentioning that, because, look, we understand, I think everybody here understands their passion, and I appreciate their right to protest. It sounds like about cameras and about state data, and I think what I would say to them is, and to all of you is, you know, no state takes this responsibility more seriously than Washington State. You know, that is number one. Number two, no state is doing more to protect data than Washington State. We work closely with states all across the country, and we know how much work we're doing to limit that information. It's a challenging time when you're dealing with a federal government that literally follows no rules, follows no agreements. They'll pass along information, the most legitimate information, to ICE if that's what they feel they want to do. And so when you're dealing with truly a rogue administration in that way, it creates challenges.
Yeah. So anyway, that just delighted me to see that here he is trying to virtue signal to this crowd of people. They still show up and shout and protest and demand. It shows if you give a mouse a cookie, nothing is ever good enough for them. Their demands will just get more extreme and more extreme and more extreme. So any sane Democrat would just stop giving in to their demands. No, but Bob Ferguson allows this person to just get in front of them, rant with their crazy sign, which I kind of wonder, does his security team hate him? Because if I were governor, I would not want somebody getting that close to me who's clearly insane. But they just sat there and, you know, dealt with it. And it wasn't just Bob Ferguson that this happened to. So the King County Council was having a meeting where they were voting on an ordinance to ban ICE agents from using or staging on county property. And protesters showed up at that, too.
Hola, me llamo Rosario López. Quiero decir que yo no veo la diferencia entre ustedes y la migra, porque se están beneficiando de nuestro dolor.
Thank you, Rosario.
Seguir beneficiándose de nuestra explotación.
Thank you, Rosario.
Y seguir beneficiándose de esto.
Thank you. Thank you, Rosario. Thank you. We're on recess. Council's on recess.
Can't win with the crazies. You can't win with the crazies. So here's a bold idea. Stop trying to please the crazies. You never, never will. All right, coming up next, a fundraiser for an author who's writing a book about protecting girls' sports and girls' spaces has been axed by Kickstarter. She'll join us to discuss why. First, if you are thinking about selling your home, maybe you're one of the many, many people or millionaires who are fleeing the state of Washington or trying to buy a home elsewhere, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwiththewest.com. You know, I saw this, I can't remember who, I think it was Jesse Proudman, the tech guy, entrepreneur who joined us on the show. He posted this listing on one of the islands for a $19 million mansion with a helicopter pad that just went up. I'm like, I know why the listing just went up. But who's going to buy that? Nobody with that much money is going to be pouring it into Washington State real estate for $19 million. So it's just like insane. But if you were thinking about selling your home, reach out to Wes. Our friend Preston did, a viewer of Undivided, and he said he just really appreciates how Wes and his team treated him as a client.
He works out of East King County, so he deals with multi-million dollar homes. My house is not anywhere near what he sells, but he made it feel like I was one of his biggest clients. I had some really stupid questions, I felt like, and ChatGPT couldn't answer them. So I felt like I was a moron reaching out to Evie sometimes, and she had a lot of grace with her answers. So just him, the way he puts you at ease, the way he treats you like you're the most important client, and just his whole staff, how helpful they are.
Yeah, so go from Sell With Wes to Sold With Wes. If you go to his website, sellwithwes.com, you can browse some of his recent listings, just check out how he performed for other clients, which I think is always a good thing to do. And then there's a lot of other things he offers right there on the website. You can use their free home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. But I think the most important thing is getting a market analysis from Wes. You know, especially if you are trying to flee the state, or maybe you're selling a high value house and trying to get out of the state and you're wondering, gosh, is anybody going to buy it in this climate? So Wes can help you do an analysis of how homes are performing in your specific area and neighborhood. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right. So there was a Kickstarter campaign for an author, a local author, who's writing a book about girls' sports and this fight to protect girls' sports and to protect girls' spaces. Her name is Arwen Beck. And I know Arwen. We know Arwen because she's been at some of the Let's Go Washington events. She's been a very vocal proponent of keeping biological boys out of girls' sports. And she's written a series of books. And the latest one she was getting started writing is called She Handled It, Adversity. And it was going to tell, it is going to tell the stories of female athletes who, you know, have had prizes and races and meets stolen from them because they've had to compete against biological boys. So she's raising money. $7,000 or so. And then all of a sudden, she finds out that Kickstarter suspended her campaign, which, gee, I wonder what Kickstarter found wrong with it. Arwen was nice enough to join us on the show today to discuss what happened. Arwen, welcome to Undivided.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, so we've been together at a couple of the Let's Go Washington events for the Initiative to Protect Girls Sports. Why is this an issue that you've gotten involved in?
Well, because my alma mater, the University of Washington, where I played volleyball, was the first Division I school in 2023, December, to offer a male player a women's scholarship. So that's when it finally came and it hit home for me because that was the team I played on.
Yeah, just insane. I mean, had you been playing at the time when they were going to allow a biological male to play? I mean, how would you have handled that?
Oh, my gosh. It wouldn't even come to my thought process. I went to Juanita High School in Kirkland. 4A school, huge school, was voted most athletic. I loved playing with the boys. I thought that they always made me better. But I knew at about the age of probably 10, probably 11, I'd say junior high, when they had the girls do the flex arm hang and the boys had to do the pull-ups, I was pissed. I was like, wait, why don't I get to do pull-ups? Because that's where they started to show the differentiation between what boys were capable of and what girls were capable of. And so I knew that from a very young age, starting out competitive swimming at 6, that boys and girls were different. But I could not imagine what these girls, these young women, are having to deal with now. Just couldn't even come on my radar.
It's insane. So tell me about the concept behind the book that you're working on, She Handled It.
Well, I have written two books that all have the same title, She Handled It and then something after it. So She Handled It Retirement, because I owned a retirement planning firm for 23 years, and we specifically focused on women in the last 10. So I found that I had a real heart for storytelling and connecting with women in that way. And I loved hearing stories of adversity, which was my podcast, She Handled It, where I just interviewed women who'd overcome major adversity. So after diving into this space in November of 24 and just really feeling like God said, you need to use your platform to be a support to these girls and use your voice from the positive perspective of what adversity and challenges and injustice does when we use it for good, when we really believe that it's going to make us a better version of ourselves. But there was one commonality that all the women had to have, and that was they were women who were speaking out for the protection of women's sports. And then I expanded it a little bit to the women's protection of spaces. So like Tish Hyman and the Patriot Barbie, Lindsey Graham, are also in the book as well. So this is just something that really is a passion project of mine, and it's a way I can use my history as an athlete, my history as an author and a storyteller and a keynote speaker, to be able to bring a real historical account that 20 years from now, 50 years from now, somebody can pick up a book and say, these were real people who were affected by this crazy time period that we were in, and this is their story. This is it from their perspective. And that's the part that so frustrates me in all of this, especially with the trans activists that are coming against me and that got the Kickstarter shut down, is that they're making it about the other person. And the thing is, this book isn't about the other person. They're not even named in it. It's just women's account of something that happened to them that hurt, and them just telling about it. And then more importantly, what they learned throughout the process and how they have used that to become a better version of themselves.
Yeah. So a compilation of stories of, you know, young female athletes, girls, women, and some of them will be familiar, right? In Washington State, some of these girls who have gone through this, whose stories.
Yep. So Anna Lee Wilson and Frances Stout are both chapters of my book as well.
Yeah. I love that. So you put this up on Kickstarter. I have to ask first, why do a Kickstarter for a book? A lot of people will just go to a publisher, get an advance on the book and write it that way.
Sure. Well, a publisher is going to take 2 years. So I didn't want to be looking at 2028 in order to do it. So I wanted to be able to do it sooner. And a traditional, it's not going to go that way. So you can go hybrid publishing, which does mean if you want something that's a lot more like a traditional publisher, you have to come to the table with money, because they're saying, we'll give you all the stuff that a traditional publisher will offer you, but you have to pay for it. But this one, I wanted to do it differently. I really wanted to be able to utilize it in a way where the proceeds can benefit this continued fight through Champion Women and Icons and the Courage Wins Award with XXXY. And so just putting it up and then throwing it onto Amazon or something like that really isn't going to be able to get the reach that I want it to be able to have. So that's why I did it.
Yeah. So you were able to, on Kickstarter, raise about $8,000 before this thing got suspended a couple days ago. Have you been given a reason from Kickstarter why they suspended the fundraising?
Well, yeah, the email that I got from their trust and safety team said that the team monitors and protects throughout their funding periods to protect the Kickstarter community. We review and we received from the members of the community. So projects are suspended when we find out that there's strong evidence that they are violating the letter of the spirit from Kickstarter's rules. And they cite two rules. One of them's pornographic material, which mine definitely was not that. Yeah. And number two, which is of course what it is, they considered it hateful or offensive content that fails to meet Kickstarter's spirit of inclusivity. Crazy. By promoting discrimination, bigotry, or intolerance towards marginalized groups.
Wow. Does the book do that? I mean, does the book take aim at these trans athletes?
No, it doesn't. It's truly the perspective of the woman who is saying, hey, I showed up like Anna Lee Wilson. I came to an event and I was expecting to run, and I was running a really great race. And then all of a sudden I was getting smoked by this unknown person, and I didn't know why. And here now I'm standing on the podium in second place, disappointed. And I'm finding out why people are whispering and snickering out in the crowd is that it was a boy who beat me, and how that felt. Yeah. And so it's from her perspective of being able to just recount the experience and how it affected her on a human level. But again, more importantly, the stuff that she went through, I mean, that's the thing, a hero's journey, it has to have some heartbreak and some backlash. And obviously, you know, Anna Lee very well, hers has come with significant backlash for a 16-year-old to deal with Antifa threats and all the things that her family has endured, to just go and public speak on her own experience. But it ends up with the important part, which is, what did she learn about herself in that process? Where did her courage come from? What would she tell her younger self, if she was able to sit down with her and give her a little bit of advice. And that's what every single one of these stories are. It's just their own perspective of what they went through, a biography about a moment in time that affected them personally.
Yeah, it's insane that girls can't even stand up for themselves. They can't even tell their own story without being considered hateful bigots. And it's just so indicative of this entire, you know, even we have the initiative, obviously, to protect girls' sports that will be voted on in November, and the sort of hate and vitriol targeted at people who are supporting that by this other side is wild. So the $8,000 you were able to raise so far, do you still get that?
Nope. So what happened with Kickstarters when they determined that it was violating their community standards, they just shut it down and completely suspend the campaign. It's done. There wasn't an open door like I can give my side or, you know, because I can kind of deduce where they may have pulled some things from. I think they thought I was actually somebody else by some of the hateful messages I was getting and things that they were saying. I'm like, that's not me. That's somebody in my book that posts a lot online. But it is what it is. They just decided that all the hate that they were getting was enough. And then I had a wonderful woman who tagged me on her post because she was so proud of herself on Instagram of how she had got it shut down. So she was thanking her community of how great they were. And she put embedded my video in it and just, you know, about how hateful and bigoted I am. Wild. And they're just so smug about it. And I just sat there and was just like, you know, I think you won the battle, but I think you're gonna find very quickly, you're gonna lose the war, because now the amount of people who are rallying around on X and people who wouldn't have even paid a single mind to the project and what was happening, they're now paying attention and they're now giving, you know, $15 here or $20 there, just saying, you know, I love what you're doing and bringing it awareness. So it's totally backfired.
Yeah, the heckler's veto.
It makes me totally laugh.
Yeah, wild. So it's now up on Give, Send, Go. Arwen, when can people expect the book to be complete?
So I'm shooting for February 2027 for National Girls and Women in Sports Day. That's what I would really like to have it out. And of course, you know, things happen with book writing, especially with a hybrid publisher. I don't know if we have some other little hurdles, but that is what I'm hoping for. 40 interviews are already done. I've already got 12 chapters written. I'm writing them at about 15 chapters a month. So I should have the manuscript done by mid-May, end of June. So that's a long runway to be able to get the final editings and then really be able to work on all the components that come to it. But also the Kickstarter is about being able to market the book and then hopefully be able to do some traveling around the country and have some book signings with a lot of these amazing women that live in pockets of Florida and, you know, and Texas and places that aren't Washington State.
Yeah. Well, I know you'll handle it, Arwen. Thank you so much. And I'm sorry this happened, but I think it'll end up being a good thing for the movement and for the book.
Yes.
They can't just silence.
Well, thank
anymore.
You so much for all your support, Prandy. I really, really appreciate it.
Yes, that's Arwen Becker writing a book about called She Handled It, Adversity, about girls trying to protect sports and their spaces. And Kickstarter decided that was just too controversial to raise money to write a book like that. So she now has a Give, Send, Go up. So you can search for it. It's called Funding She Handled It, Adversity book. And she has to raise the money all over again. Because as she explained, the way that Kickstarter works is it's sort of funding ahead of time. And so it's not like, you know, she can take the money that she already raised on Kickstarter or anything like that. So she's got to start over from nothing. Absolutely insane. Don't use Kickstarter. Don't use Kickstarter. I think GoFundMe is also one of the bad ones, notorious ones, right? Just use Give, Send, Go. They'll let you do anything like that. All right. Coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, more nonsense out of the Mount Vernon, Washington School District after a story we did earlier this week. First, our friends at Valentine Roofing are the ones that you want to call if you've got some shady, suspicious-looking places on your roof after all this horrible weather that we've had. If you've got a couple shingles out of place or whatever it is, have Valentine come over and take a look and do an assessment for you. And through the end of March, they have a great promo running. If you get a new roof roof with them, you get a year of roof maintenance for free, which I think is pretty cool. So, and they have flexible financing options. So if you know your roof is nearing the end of its life, now is a great time to take advantage of that promo. They've got financing options with payments as low as $159 a month. So that promo runs through the end of March. So take advantage of that. Reach out for your free estimate, 206 Roofing, 206 Roofing. As always, make sure you tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided. And if you don't need a new roof right now, you can use Valentine to help you knock out some of your spring to-do list, exterior cleaning, cleaning your gutters, etc. 206 Roofing, 206 Roofing, to schedule your free estimate with our friends at Valentine today. And with that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. Okay, Mount Vernon, Washington. So first, the internet lost its mind at a story that we did. Was this Monday? I think it was. Yeah, because on Monday at Mount Vernon High School, which if you're not familiar, it's like north of Seattle, but supposed to be kind of a really common sense area, but clearly we've got some issues going on in the school district. So on Monday after school, they had that protest sign making event and contest that was sponsored by the local Indivisible Group and the local Skagit County Democrats. And they talked about it in the morning announcements, but we accidentally used a picture of the wrong logo for a different Mount Vernon High School. And people are like, this story's made up. They're the Bulldogs, not the Knights. No, we just like Googled poorly, I guess, and put up a picture that was the wrong logo. But no, it did indeed happen at Mount Vernon High School in Mount Vernon, Washington, home of the Bulldogs. I apologize, not the Knights, the Bulldogs. So I wanted to make that correction, because it led to a whole internet conspiracy about our story. Anyway, some more nonsense happening at Mount Vernon High School. And this is always how this goes down. We do one story at a school or a school district, and then more people start to send us stuff that's happening within that school district. It happened a lot at the Puyallup, Washington School District. We just did story after story after story. So I imagine some gems will be coming out of Mount Vernon High School. But someone tipped us off to this required social studies class that's being taught up there. So it is Ethnic Studies 201 within the social studies umbrella, and it's called Identity, Power, and Action. Just the title. I'm like, great. What are we gearing up for here? Here's the description. The major purpose of this course is to educate students to be politically and socially conscious about their personal connections to issues in their communities and at the national level, and to explore how to create change for themselves, their communities, and the environment. Okay. Students will study identity and civic action rooted in an analysis of power throughout history. By studying history from multiple perspectives, gee, I just want to sit in on this class. Multiple perspectives. I really wonder what that sounds like. Students will better understand current movements to create a just and equitable society and make connections between the past and today. Literally, they're creating social justice warriors like every other freaking school district in the state of Washington. And I also have an issue with that line about studying history from multiple perspectives. Like, are we going to study it from Hitler's perspective? Oh, Hitler, you know, here's how Hitler perceived his actions in killing all the Jews. I mean, I guarantee it's stuff like that. It's like, oh, the perspective, you know, the Native Americans versus Columbus and all of these things. And it's history is history. Just teach it in a factual manner. This is what happened. And don't put your social justice lens into it.
And nowhere in there does it say we're going to teach healthy dialogue when right. You disagree. Nothing about that. It's no. Power, action. That is not. Yeah,
power, action, identity, equitable, peace. Socially conscious, politically and socially conscious. And then when it says creating change for the environment. So now is it also like an environmental mm-hmm. class in climate change? I mean, this just has all the woke buzzwords. And again, this is Mount Vernon, you guys. This is supposed to be a sane little bastion in the state of Washington. So when I say this is a required class, it's required unless you're in advanced placement. So we looked at the ninth grade course calendar, and you can obviously pick what you're going to do. So for social studies, your options are world geography and this identity, power, and action class, so one semester, one the next semester, or AP human geography. And of course, not all students qualify for advanced placement. So for the students that don't, they're taking this identity, power, and action class, which is going to be the majority. Yeah, it's an indoctrination class. And so that's going to be the majority of students. And then dual language options available. So you don't even have to learn English. They'll find a teacher that'll teach you in Spanish. which is interesting. But if your student goes to Mount Vernon High School and they're in the ninth grade, just be advised that they will have to take this Identity, Power, and Action class unless they're in advanced placement. And I highly recommend having a conversation with them about what they might encounter, depending on who's teaching this class. But if you're talking about political and social consciousness, personal connections, how to create change in the environment, and studying history from multiple perspectives, you really need to buckle your child up for what kind of nonsense might be spewed at them in indoctrination in a class like that. Insanity in Mount Vernon. Wild. All right. National news. We were going to talk about it on the show. I was like, oh, I can't wait for the California gubernatorial debate because I'm very interested in what happens in California this year, given, you know, their slight shift toward the right in their last election and some of the fact that, you know, they don't really have a good Democratic candidate for governor. And so I was really excited to watch the debate last night, and then it didn't happen. We'll talk about why. First, our friends at Firstmark Insurance can help you navigate the complex world of insurance. FirstmarkInsurance.com, FirstmarkInsurance.com. Whether you need insurance for your personal life or your business life, I use Firstmark for both. And I think one of the great things about having a local company handle your insurance needs is they know what local businesses are going through because they're one of them. Dave Taylor, the CEO of Firstmark, said, you know, costs are really increasing across the board for businesses.
We're seeing the impact of just increased cost on businesses, mm-hmm. like their increased cost for their, you know, their workers' comp, the L&I stuff, all the stuff they have to go through to maintain their business.
Yeah.
And then insurance, it just is one of those items that's increasing right along with it. The property values, you know, and rates for property insurance are going up. So yeah, so it's tough on business owners for sure.
Yeah, and so get a local business to help you save money. And Firstmark can do that. We have so many undivided viewers and listeners who've used Firstmark for their personal insurance, business insurance, and say, Brandy, I'm saving hundreds of dollars a month, thousands of dollars a year. FirstmarkInsurance.com. Take the Firstmark challenge today. FirstmarkInsurance.com. All right, down in California, debate was supposed to happen last night, canceled. So there was supposed to be, it was going to be like a, you know, bigger debate field because there's a ton of candidates because there's no real clear front runner. And so it was going to be Republicans Steve Hilton and Chad Bianco, and then Democrats Tom Steyer, Katie Porter, Eric Swalwell, and Matt Mahan. And they, you know, and again, like Steve Hilton is the top polling candidate in the latest poll, and he's only at 16%. And then the top polling Democrats in the latest kind of aggregate poll, they're all at 10% between Katie Porter, Tom Steyer, and Eric Swalwell. So there is absolutely no clear front runner. So it was going to be a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people on the debate stage. But all of a sudden, the debate's canceled. Last minute, it was going to be held co-hosted by USC and the local ABC affiliate. Well, it's because, and it started when one of the candidates who did not make the debate stage, did not qualify for the debate stage, Tony Thurmond, who's the current state superintendent of public instruction in California, he posted this video.
California's never had a governor of color. I'm here at the state capitol, where for nearly two centuries, we've had governors who were white men. And now, in one of the most diverse states in the country, with one of the most diverse candidate fields that we've ever seen, debate organizers are trying to keep it that way. They've put together a debate stage that shuts out candidates of color. That's a choice. A choice by USC, by KABC, and by Univision. To ignore the reality of California and to silence the voices that power this state.
Or just to include only the viable candidates. I mean, for the love of God. So if you, and if you look, I mean, at all the candidates who are currently in the race, the only ones who qualified for the debate stage are the white ones, and the only ones who didn't qualify for the debate stage are people of color. But that's because USC and ABC, this is the same with every debate across the country at all levels, you have certain stipulations for you have to meet this threshold in order to participate. And that dude who you just heard from there, Thurmond, he's at 1% in the latest poll. 1%, and this guy's out there being like, it's racist to exclude me from the debate stage. And one of their arguments is Matt Mahan, who's the San Jose mayor, just entered the race this year. He's only at 3%. And there's a couple other candidates around 3% who are people of color who weren't included on the debate stage, but he's raised way more money. And so USC came out and look, we said we had these rules. We had a viability sort of algorithm, and it factors in your polling and how much money you're raising. And so Matt was like great on the money raised. And so he was included in the debate. Had nothing to do with skin color, obviously. But when you're at 1% in the polls, I guess you just have to make it about skin color. And here's the worst part, that they caved. USC and ABC caved and said, OK, we're not going to host the debate anymore. because the black guy pulling at 1% accused you of racism? I thought we were moving past this stuff where you couldn't be so easily shamed. And you know how much work goes into a debate? Debate planning and preparation and the location and all of that, and carving out the TV time. And the day of, they cancel it. So this is the statement from the University of Southern California. We recognize that concerns about the selection criteria for the debate have created a significant distraction from the issues that matter to voters. Unfortunately, USC and KABC have not been able to reach an agreement on expanding the number of candidates at the debate. As a result, USC has made the difficult decision to cancel the debate, and we'll look for other opportunities to educate voters on the candidates and the issues. Like, literally for no reason. Literally for no reason, because some guy is used to being given preferential treatment because of the color of his skin. And in this case, he was excluded, even though he's polling even worse than Jay Inslee was in Jay Inslee's presidential campaign. And so he complains, and so they cave. And what's going to happen? There's always people who are going to complain that they aren't included in debates. Always. Every single time. And they'll make up some reason for why this is not fair. But you have to have some sort of standard. And those are pretty widely accepted standards. That, okay, between polling and fundraising, we're going to cut it off at this number. You're either in the top six or you're not. And they weren't, and it had nothing to do with their skin pigmentation. If they want to be included in the next debate, maybe they should poll better. Maybe they should get out and talk to more voters. Sell their ideas better. I don't know. So one of those candidates who was supposed to be on the debate stage, and I actually would have loved for him to be asked about this, and I'm sure this issue would have been brought up. So Chad Bianco, who's the sheriff of Riverside, and we've had him on the show here before. I don't remember what we were talking about. I think it has something to do with COVID mandates or something like that. So he recently seized his office as the sheriff, 650,000 ballots for an investigation. So this is tied to Prop 50, which was the vote that happened back in November that ended up revamping California's congressional districts to favor Democrats. So it was in response to redistricting that Texas had done, and Prop 50 was successful. So there's a third-party election integrity organization that said that it found 45,000 excess votes. So this third-party organization claims that there were 45,000 more ballots counted then the election office says there were people who voted. So the Riverside sheriff says this is a criminal investigation. I'm seizing all 650,000 ballots, and we're going to do a hand count to see how many ballots there actually are. And he says it's not about counting to see if the results changed per se. He said the first thing they're going to do is just a basic count. Here's what he posted on social media.
For those not aware, we are conducting an investigation into an alleged and potential 45,000 extra votes counted than the number of ballots cast in the November 2025 special election. So we are all clear. This isn't about counting yes and no votes. This is simply counting the total ballots and comparing that total with the number of votes reported by the Dominion machines. Plain and simple. Common sense. Not only did a Superior Court judge approve a warrant to obtain the ballots, but also issued a separate order to count them. Why in the world would Rob Bonta want that count stopped unless he was afraid of what that count would uncover? We have an extremely politically biased appeals court, so this is going to be interesting. What's it going to be? Let law enforcement count the ballots as part of a lawful investigation, or halt the investigation and sweep it under the rug? All California voters should be demanding transparency, not legal maneuvers and cover-ups.
Right. And what problem does the Attorney General of California have that he's so aggressively trying to stop this? I mean, at this point, the election's over. You know, it's been certified. The ballots are sitting there. It's part of they had probable cause to get a judge to sign off on a warrant, got the ballots as part of a criminal probe. They're going to count them. And either the count is correct or the count is not correct. And then you can decide how to proceed from there. But why is the Attorney General trying to stop it so aggressively? I mean, if there isn't this kind of widespread issue where there's like 45,000 mystery votes that came out of nowhere, then you're proven correct that, oh, our system is great and everything was fine and this sheriff is off his rocker in the middle of a gubernatorial campaign. I mean, the sheriff has to feel pretty confident that there's an issue here, because he would look pretty stupid if they counted at the end of the day and this was just a total falsehood and he's in the middle of a gubernatorial campaign. So if the AG doesn't think this problem exists, he should just let him do it. Makes no sense, and I'm fine with that. Count them. Count them, have a lot of oversight in the counting process, and then if there is this big discrepancy, then the state has to decide how to proceed from there, because Prop 50 is a big deal. And the reconfiguration of the congressional districts in California is a really big deal. So everyone should want to make sure that those votes were counted properly. All right, coming up next, we'll get to our subscriber show question, which was quite a head scratcher for a lot of you. Can't make a decision, can ya? First, could the future of AI impact your retirement portfolio? Are you worried about what's happening with AI, crypto, tech, a lot of tech layoffs? If you are, join our friend Zach Abraham for his free live webinar coming up April 2nd at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. He's going to talk about all of that, but we also chatted with him a little bit, and he's going to fold a lot into there about what's happening in Iran and oil prices, and who knows where that will be by April 2nd, because it seems to be changing pretty rapidly by the day. But Bulwark has a full schedule during the webinar to help you cut through the market noise and talk about the real fundamentals of value investing. They'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is focused on risk management, always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So join Zach's Cutting Through the Market Noise webinar, April 2nd, 3:30 p.m. Pacific, totally free to sign up. Register at knowyourriskpodcast.com. While you're there, you can also schedule your own personalized Know Your Risk portfolio review and subscribe to Zach's daily market recap at knowyourriskpodcast.com. That's knowyourriskpodcast.com. Okay, let's get to our daily subscriber show question for our wonderful paid subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X. So there is very likely to be, well, not very likely, I would say it's likely that there are going to be four initiatives on your ballot in November. So we already know about two of them, the initiative to protect girl sports and to protect parental rights. Those are definitely going to be on your ballot. And then we expect there to be some sort of effort to repeal the income tax that was just passed. That could be on your November ballot. And then the Washington State Republican Party has just come out and said they're taking another shot at the voter ID initiative to try to get on your ballot in November. So there could be a lot of stuff on your ballot in November. And I asked you guys, just assuming all of them make it, right? Which is most important to you of those four initiatives or potential initiatives to voters? Nicole, which one?
That is. Isn't that a tough one? It's kind of like picking your favorite pet.
picking your favorite child pet, yes.
But I'm going to say, because I'm hoping that nationally the ID thing happens, even though I'm not sure that it will. I'm going to say protecting girls' sports because of the significant... It would just be this big, it's coming to an end. It would signify something bigger.
Yes.
I guess. I think that it represents something bigger than just girls' sports.
So yeah.
I think that would probably be the most impactful for us. I think that they'll continue to get around protecting parental rights, although I hope that this will solidify some of the rules. And then, repealing income tax. We'll get there.
I got to say, I agree with you. Protecting girls' sports, only because it is this social issue that if we don't defeat it now, things will get crazier and crazier and the Democrats will be utterly insufferable. Mm-hmm. And this whole trans ideology, but utterly insufferable. So it's more of a symbolic victory. I mean, it's not symbolic for the people who are affected by it, but it really is this sort of moment in time where we get to say enough. Enough of the absolute nonsense. And then with repealing the income tax, I mean, that's a very close second. And obviously I want all of these to pass if they all make it to the ballot. But, you know, I think that one of the avenues that's being pursued is the legal challenges, and it's clearly unconstitutional. So maybe there's a sliver of hope I have that the state Supreme Court will do the right thing here, especially since there's some open state Supreme Court seats. So you guys feel differently. Protecting girls' sports is the bottom.
I know. We're the minority.
We're the minority. So only about 10% of you said protecting girls' sports, followed by protecting parental rights, then the income tax, and then voter ID. Numero uno, voter ID. And I think that's because a lot of people said basically everything is downhill from there. Everything's downstream from there. If we can't protect our elections, then we can't do anything else. Michael says all are very important, but perhaps voter ID will help reduce the left's political stranglehold on state misgovernment. Kathy says, that's hard to pick because they're all so important. All those and more are the reasons I'm working to move to Idaho. Don't leave us, Kathy, at least not until after the election so we can count your vote. Bolt up. Getting elections fair and honest should be the highest priority. But look, I mean, the state GOP wasn't able to do it last year, so they need to be much more organized. And if they want to do it, something has to change between last year and this year. Weisscastle, I vote based on important and likely to pass. Voter reform is more important, but we need that at the national level. I do agree with that as well. Let's do two more here. Pirate Dawn, if you can eliminate voter fraud, all the other items should fall in line to a reasonable extent. Jake says all of them are important, but guaranteeing that our vote counts and only legal voters are able to vote is paramount. I have had a number of roommates that have moved out and we still get their ballot mailed to us. Although illegal, it would not be hard to fill out more ballots than I'm allowed. In-person voting with ID should be the norm, not the exception. It's kind of insane that we have to have an initiative for voter ID.
It is.
It's so stupid that of all the things we have to show an ID, that you have to put any energy into making sure that people are who they say they are when they vote.
And all the stories of these ballots arriving at places, and they're like, don't worry, it won't get counted. How much money are we spending on all of these ballots that are outdated and right. addresses are sent to dead people? Yeah. I mean, there's a lot wrong with that process.
Yeah. All right. To some viewer comments on other issues. On the NBA board approving the potential return of the Seattle Sonics. Ooh, $50 super chat from Eric. I think the reason Ferguson isn't signing the millionaire's income tax is because I pointed out, is it because of the Sonics, right? That he's not signing it and he's like having a second thoughts. I think the reason Ferguson isn't signing it is because he wants plausible deniability. He'll just wait the 90 days, it becomes law, and he can say, oh, it wasn't me that allowed the tax to become law, it was the legislature. Yeah, he'll get no plausible deniability. He's on tape all session saying, I support it, I'm happy with it. So whether he signs it or not, he'll get no plausible deniability. But you could be right that he doesn't want that moment, like I said, of him signing it.
Doesn't that cut into the time they have to collect signatures to repeal it as well? I've heard some talk of that, yes. So I don't know.
Wow, that is a good point. I hadn't thought about that, because you can't actually get an initiative going to repeal something that isn't law mm-hmm. yet. Why didn't I think of that? Who said that? Why didn't I think of that? God, I'm stupid. What? I host a political show and I hadn't thought about that? That's why he's not signing it.
Well.
Until the very end?
Well, I think that's part of it. I don't think that's a full reason. Like I said, I think he's planning a big party.
I hate these people. No.
Need some extra time.
Ridiculous. Doug Troyer, good luck trying to bring back the NBA with no incentives. Why says Ferguson will not veto it. He just doesn't want to put his face next to this now that your prediction proved true, which would have been obvious to anyone with a functioning brain. On HUD investigating our reparations program, Late Night with Tina says programs like this are racist in nature and discriminate against all persons not named in the program. 100%. It's so black and white, for lack of a better phrase. Looking up for Jesus, reparations in a state that never had slavery. Make that make sense. Yeah, we never had slaves in Washington. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, but you did have redlining yes. and all that stuff, but it's like, in some of these cases, they don't even have to prove that their family was discriminated. You don't have to prove. So for instance, if you had a family member who was here and black during housing discrimination, that doesn't mean that they were part of housing discrimination. It doesn't mean they were discriminated against, but you don't have to prove that. You just have to prove that they existed here and they had the right skin color, which doesn't make any sense. Let's see, Diana, I had to pay that fee when I paid off my mortgage, $400. Yeah, it's insane.
Crazy.
And it even hurts. So let's say you have a black homeowner, first time homebuyer, and they didn't use this program or whatever, mm-hmm. they're paying into, so you have black people who are forced to pay this added hundreds and hundreds of dollars when they close on their home. Just wild. Bill Swick, reparations. The left will now start ads claiming it is racist to question a racist home finance program that gives money based on race. And they'll question the black HUD secretary and call him racist. Or what do they call black people that don't agree with them? Like Uncle Tom's. They're always like, yeah, oh, mm-hmm. We love black people unless you're conservative. And then you're a race traitor. Just crazy. On the King County Council meeting and poor Bob being heckled by the left, Big Princess, if Bob's so smart, how come he thinks this law will have any effect on federal enforcement? He knows it won't. He's just virtue signaling for dummies. ZDS, rogue administration. Oh, the irony. Yes, Bob called Trump a rogue administration when they are absolutely a rogue administration. Literally just passed an unconstitutional income tax. Mm-hmm. On the fundraiser being shut down for the pro-girl sports book, Observer, with all due respect, there seem to be a large contingency of women who accept these males with no problem. Seems that the enemy is inside the gate, the Trojan horse. Yeah, and I get more mad at women who take the side of men and, like, defending their right to invade women's spaces and beat women in sports. It's just insane. And these are the women who would just say they're feminists and, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. women power, yeah. except if women are trying to protect themselves and those women happen to be conservative. Todd Welch, we need women to be at the forefront of the no boys and girls sports. All marketing needs to be pro-girl, pro-women. I agree, but it is, I think, and still get vilified. Look at the extent to which Riley Gaines has been vilified and XXXY Athletics. We've been vilified. There was just some dumb article written about me yesterday about how I attack trans kids. It's like, no, it's caving. I just don't think they're girls. It's just so stupid.
Those caving to the mob. It's the media. It's caving to the mob.
Yeah. Chuck Heller says, the next segment of Unbelievable sponsored by me. We should talk about making this permanent. Yeah, and easier because he sponsors yeah, right? it every day in the super chat. So we'll have to come up with a fair price, Chuck. Merwin Wren, multiple approved perspectives. Yeah, there's multiple approved perspectives on history. I want to sit in on that class.
Read those course descriptions of the classes your kids are forced to take.
Yeah, Country Guy says it could actually be an interesting class, but they will mess it up. For example, WW2 history from an average German's perspective might be interesting. On the California gubernatorial debate being canceled, Mark Madison says, elect me or you're racist. And that's the only thing this guy has going for him. It's like, I'm black and we've never had a black governor.
There's also black people being polled and they're not picking you either, apparently.
The polls, that's such a good point. The polls, they didn't just pick white people to take the polls. No. So not even the black people want you to be their governor. Oh, that's good Goodness stuff. Gracious. That's good stuff. All right, we'll get to our closing sanity check coming up next. First, if you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. It was funny. We had a little like weird crossover because our friend Wes Jones, who's a real estate agent, but he and his dad also have a couple rental units. He sent me his membership confirmation. It's like, I just became a member of RHA. I was like, you better have told him you did it because of my show. He's like, I did. It's a little crossover with our sponsors I thought was nice. But in addition to, if you're not a landlord, if you're interested in housing policy, I mean, you know, builder, developer, there's so many intersections there. Great idea to become a member of RHA. They have great events across the state that are actually quite a bit of fun. I've been to some of them on housing policy that you can be part of, sign up for. So go to rhawa.org. They are Washington's trusted resource empowering housing providers. So at a personal one-on-one level, if you're a member, but then also more broadly advocating for good housing policy and against bad housing policy in Olympia and in cities and counties across the state. So rhawa.org, rhawa.org. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. Love this clip because you see Legacy News and some of the network news stations and outlets, their ratings are just horrible. I mean, so far gone from where they used to be. And there's a reason for that. And there's a reason why shows like this can be successful. And Vince Vaughn, actor Vince Vaughn, he was on Theo Vaughn's show, his podcast. And I thought he made a really good point about it. And I didn't know that Vince Vaughn was sane. I guess I didn't know that he was amongst the sane actors. Maybe I'm just finding that out for the first time, but I thought he had a really good point about why it is that podcasts and independent shows are doing so well right now.
The podcasts have gotten so much more popular with less production, less writers, less staff.
Two people working here and both of them are hungover. Then one guy has shingles.
But the place is clean. I like that. You keep a clean place.
Thank you. Yeah, we did a vacuum.
But
shingles.
But yeah, because people want authenticity.
Yeah.
And I think that the talk shows, to a large part, became really agenda-based.
Yeah.
They were going to evangelical people to what they thought. You know what I mean? And so people just rejected it because it didn't feel authentic. It felt like they had an agenda. And it stopped being funny, and it started feeling like I was in a class I didn't want to take.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was talking about the late night shows. They all became basically the same show. All jokes about bashing on Donald Trump. They weren't funny anymore. And that's totally true. And one little quick thing he said there about authenticity, because I'm always thinking about like what's coming next in media? What, like, how do we stay one step ahead of sort of people's changing desires and all of this? And I mean, AI is changing things big time. And I don't know if you guys have been feeling this, but I've been feeling this lately is like, I keep wanting to just put my phone down because I get inundated with AI slop. And it is so annoying and it's so soul-sucking. And so on the authenticity front, I think more than ever, people are hungry for authenticity because they're getting so much inauthentic stuff online and the algorithm is feeding that to them. And so I think we're only going to continue to see this trend of more authentic shows, you know, funner stuff and just realism. I also think it's why, sorry, I usually wrap up the show pretty quick here, but I do you know, Instagram reels and stuff. And I always get annoyed that my reels where I'm sitting on my couch at night with no makeup on and my hair looks like hell do so much better than my reels when I'm on set and all put together. And I'm like, maybe it's the authenticity thing where people are just so sick of everybody prim and proper put together. But yeah, I think that that's going to become more and more a desire of consumers, is they just want authentic content. All right, that has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. Tiny bit more appreciation for our paid subscribers. If you'd like to support our show for $5 a month, you can sign up. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. You get access to participate in our daily subscriber show polls, Q&As, also our weekly episodes of Sundays with Subscribers, in-depth interviews on interesting topics. And then you just help me pay my bills and the team and all that stuff. That's nice. Okay, so we'll see you back here tomorrow at noon for our final live show of the week.